Podcasting from a secret location under the mats. This is the Lessons from the Dojang Podcast, a podcast that literally has nothing to do with martial arts, but instead, we discuss the biggest news stories of the week. Kind of makes you wonder how we came up with the name, doesn't it? Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and attorney Frank Natal.
Oh, I'm wonderful, Patsy. Thank you for asking. How about yourself? Yeah, it sets up to be a pretty big day. I think, if everything happens as promised, we're gonna get a report tomorrow, a redacted report. How much it's redacted with the color coding and all that stuff, we'll see. But I have some thoughts about, I guess kind of expectation setting for those that listen and whatever side of the aisle you're on. And I was wondering if you wanted me to go through that, Master Patsy. Cool. So, I think that there's a bit of whitewashing that went on with how Barr characterized, summarized the 300 or 400 pages worth of this report. However, I would put a little caveat in there to say that he probably didn't push it too far. And the reason I believe that is if you're to believe what's going on is true, or what you're hearing is going on is true, then there is an element of cooperation between Mueller, his team, and Barr right now, to the extent that they are working on the redactions together. And to me, I would think that to have that level of cooperation, yes, Mueller's a professional. Yes, Mueller would take advantage of any opportunity he has to try to get his message out there about this report. But I would think that if there was a big, bold lie that was told about this report, then you wouldn't see any cooperation from Mueller or his team to try to work on the redactions, I wouldn't think. Or at least no meaningful cooperation. So I think to that extent, what we're going to see tomorrow is probably a lot of what we already know, which is that there were 30 something indictments. There were a bunch of, convictions as a result of this. There were a lot of contacts between Trump's campaign and foreign entities, including the Russians. However, there's no direct link that can show that Trump himself knowingly violated any law with regard to colluding or conspiring with a foreign country to interfere with our election. So, to that extent, I think that if people are waiting for some bombshell that says there's collusion, or there's a hint of collusion on Trump's part, but that there's not enough evidence, I think they may be let down if they're waiting for that. However, if you're willing to sift through a lot of detail and you're willing to get to the bottom of some of the innuendo that's in the report, I think there's going to be some things that really are disturbing about the fact that a presidential campaign could be infiltrated to the extent that this one was. And that could be damning in the long run to Trump. Not now. And I don't think there's going to be any significant fallout in the next 2 to 3 months as a result of this report. The Trump campaign folks, the Trump folks, they'll continue to spin this in the way that they've continued to spin it from day one, that there's nothing there. It's a big nothing burger. It has nothing to do with Trump himself. We told you from day one, then we told you when Barr's summary came out. And, they've had the advantage of time. They've had the advantage of throwing the first punch, so to speak, and saying that all this has been fabricated as to Trump himself. The problem is that there's no fabrication as to the indictments and convictions. Those things are real. And those things happened as a result of folks that are in the Trump campaign, that were associated with the Trump White House. So the damaging thing here is that in the long run, a very wise candidate, a very politically astute party, and party leaders can look at this and say, wait a minute. Okay, maybe we can't prove that you knowingly did anything, but isn't it just as bad that you unwittingly allowed these people to be involved in your campaign, to be that close to the White House, to be that close to our secrets, to be that close to the power center of our country, that you were so lackadaisical and uninformed that you allowed this to happen? So I think that once that narrative is allowed to take hold, and that's going to take some time, Master Patsy. It's going to take some time. It's going to take a political message and crafting to do. It's going to damage Trump, but it's not going to happen right away. And that's my big takeaway. Right. Yep. Yeah, right. Yep. Right. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. 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 Absolutely. And I do think there's going to be something there. I do think that, and I agree with you, and I don't mean to say, and I hope I alluded to that when I first opened my segment, that I think it'll be in there. There's going to be something in there when you parse through this. The problem is, it's going to be able to be painted by, and this is what you brought up very, very importantly, that there is going to be a rebuttal prepared. And they already are preparing at the Trump team, legal team. It's not Trump because it's just not, he's not patient enough to parse through 300 or 400 pages and to figure out what he needs to rebut to and how to articulate that in written form. I mean, the guy's very savvy. He's politically savvy. He lands on his feet. So I'm not saying he's dumb, but I'm saying he just doesn't have the patience or time to do that, what is required to set up that rebuttal. But as you said, Master Patsy, there's going to be a rebuttal. And it reminds me of the Shakespeare line, methinks thou doth protest too much. Because, if there's nothing wrong, then you don't need to be saying, well, gee, it wasn't me. I didn't do anything. I didn't sleep with that woman. Nobody accused you of sleeping with that woman. Why are you saying you're sleeping with that woman? I think you're protesting too much. But the point is, they're doing that because they're to the trained eye, and to somebody who's going to take the time to look at this, there's going to be all kind of links to say that he obstructed justice, but that they couldn't really do anything about it at this point in time for a variety of reasons. And what I believe is the big rebuttal to this is going to be they're going to really point fingers at how the evidence was gathered. They're going to point fingers at how the investigation started and say that it was illegally started and that none of these things that came out of this should even be considered, first of all. And that secondly, that since there's no crime, there's no cover up. And there can't be obstruction if there's no crime. And you really have poison fruit that you've gathered here because you started this whole investigation from an illegal standpoint. So I think that's where they're going to try to make their continuation of the arguments that they've made, the continuation of the narrative that they want to frame about this whole matter. And that's what I have no idea. I'm not a fly on the wall on their legal team, but I'm just suspecting that their rebuttal will be along those two very strong lines, maybe three. One, you've got an illegal investigation that really shouldn't have happened. It was on shaky ground to begin with. Two, with, but that's going to be their narrative. Right. Exactly. That's their MO. That's their.
That's one of their playbooks.
Right.
You?
Yeah. And that's something that's going to come out as well, you know, because that's something that would be a real dumb one to lie about. Not that they haven't lied about dumb things, but because, you know, as you said, it's going to be real soon that Mueller's going to be in front of Congress. And one of the questions that they absolutely can ask him is, once you turned in your report, to what extent did you work on any redactions? To what extent did you work on the summaries that we got to see, you know, anything like that. And that's perfectly in bounds for him to answer that question. Questions, you know, I could see, you know, some flub ups. And look, this is, I'm hard on people sometimes when they ask questions, because that's that lawyer in me that, you know, wants people to ask the perfect question. And I get real excited when somebody who's a non-lawyer like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez asks very specific questions that's leading to a conclusion that she's not, you know, using puffery. She's not, you know, being extra wordy. She's not trying to like look at me. She's just asking the questions that end up getting to a point. You box somebody in with these questions, and you do it piece by piece by piece, block by block by block. And she did that really well. So somebody, you know, she has it inside of her. She's definitely got some skill, but she's also probably got some good team players that are with her helping her as well. I would imagine her staff may contain a lawyer or two, but she does a great job. So, you know, I get a little rough on some of the folks, you know, as I've done in the past with their questions. So I could see some flub ups where they may cross the line with a question or two, even about the post report work. May, you know, allow for some of that. Hey, I can't, you know, there's an objection on the other side to me answering that question, and I can't answer that question. But I would say that once they get the hang of what they're doing in there, once they start questioning them, there's probably a lot. I would have to say 90 plus percent of what's been done post report would be fair game. protect the informants, protect the people who are going to be witnesses in cases that are still yet to be tried. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And there are a lot of them that want to see the full report. And you asked me a question a couple podcasts ago, Master Patsy, that I think is very relevant right now that we're talking about this. Your question was, what do I think about the way the strategy that the Dems are employing to push for the full report, and whether or not they should go to court, and whether or not they should be, waiting to see what happens with Barr producing the report and negotiating around the redactions, et cetera, et cetera. And I think they've played it right. Now that we are here and we're not too far down the road. I mean, we're far enough that they've been able to set the tone and set the narrative and kind of have the benefit of some time passing. But in the big scheme of things, how far out are we out from when they start running primaries for the 2020 election? Pretty far. And the way we started this segment about, next 3 months aren't going to be huge bombshells hitting, in my opinion, that could change, but I don't expect that to happen. But after that, once you start to really get into the nitty-gritty of this thing, it could be a fodder for some good campaign work. And I think that the relevance of that question you asked a couple weeks ago is that, look, we're here now and we got the moment that we've been waiting for to see, at least a redacted report. And I think the smart strategy here was that they've got to this point without litigation. Litigation could have delayed things even longer. Litigation could have had some uncertainty involved. Litigation could have set the parameters worse than what Barr may have been willing to give. I don't believe that, but in my heart, but and in my mind tells me that Barr is probably going to overreach a little bit more than what a court would have allowed, but it's still uncertainty. And then you have this finality. You have this finality that you now you're stuck with. So here we have something where Barr was willing to give X, but maybe now that we get X, now that Congress gets X and the public gets X, after they get X, there's nothing stopping them from then going to court and saying, okay, now we've seen X, we want the full report, and a court order is allowed. You can get a court order to remove these redactions if we show just cause or reason to have these redactions removed. And that goes to your point today, too. There's no reason why Congress can't see these things. So they can make the argument in court and say, look, we're not the general public. We're the United States Congress. We know that we have to safeguard these things, but we also know that we have to safeguard the country. And there's things in this redacted area that deal with what we've seen X. Now we need to see Y so that we can make the conclusion Z. Because without Y added to X, we're never going to get to Z. We can't get to the end. So, court, listen, we have to see this. It's in the national interest to see it. And we're not going to disclose it to anybody. We have parameters, we'll have safeguards put in place. They can make whatever argument they want. But see, the nice thing is now they've already got something in hand. And when they go to court, they're not going to get less than what they already got. They're probably going to get more.
That was weird.
Can you hear me, Patsy?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay.
For some reason, I lost you whenever, or I must have dropped or something, whenever you started talking about, if we have time, I want to go.
Julian Assange and how even the people on the left are talking. Are you there?
Yep, I'm here. Now I can
Okay.
hear you.
I wanted to go over Julian Assange a little bit, if we have time, and talk about,
Yep.
how people even on the left are talking about how, the government attacked journalism and all that crap. And I'm going to make the argument that what he's doing literally has no journalistic integrity whatsoever. Okay, and again, it's if we have time. If we don't, I don't care if we scrap that whole part. It's just, you know, so we'll see. If we got time, we will. And if we don't, no, that's fine too. But at least we have something. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Yep.
Okay, I'm gonna give it 5 seconds so I have no sound at all, and then I'll start.
Okay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your weekly audio lesson, Lessons from the Dojang, episode number 8. Look at this. We're moving up in the world. Almost. We're getting there, Frank. We're getting there. God willing, we'll get it all. We'll get it going. I am your one of your co-hosts, Master Patsy Zarella, and with me, as always, my friend and your other co-host, Frank Natel. How have you been, Frank?
Wonderful, Patsy. Thank you for asking.
Oh, I
How
could
about
not
yourself?
Complain. It's just been an absolutely great week. So let's just jump right into this. Tomorrow's a pretty big day.
Yeah, it sets up to be a pretty big day. I think, you know, if everything happens as promised, we're gonna get a report tomorrow, a redacted report. You know, how much it's redacted with the color coding and all that stuff, we'll see. But and I have some thoughts about, you know, I guess kind of expectation setting for those that listen and whatever side of the aisle you're on. And I was wondering if you wanted me to go through.
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead. I'm sure, I promise everybody's going to hear what your thoughts are.
Cool. So, you know, I mean, I think that there's a bit of whitewashing that went on with how Barr characterized, you know, summarized the 300 or 400 pages worth of this report. However, I would put a little caveat in there to say that he probably didn't push it too far. And the reason I believe that is if you're to believe what's going on is true, or what you're hearing is going on is true, then there is an element of cooperation between Mueller, his team, and Barr right now, to the extent that they are working on the redactions together. And to me, I would think that to have that level of cooperation, yes, Mueller's a professional. Yes, Mueller would take advantage of any opportunity he has to try to get his message out there about this report. But I would think that if there was a big, bold lie that was told about this report, then you wouldn't see any cooperation from Mueller or his team to try to work on the redactions, I wouldn't think. So, or at least no meaningful cooperation. So I think to that extent, what we're going to see tomorrow is probably a lot of what we already know, which is that there were 30 something indictments. There were a bunch of, you know, convictions as a result of this. There were a lot of contacts between Trump's campaign and foreign entities, including the Russians. However, there's no direct link that can show that Trump himself knowingly violated any law with regard to colluding or conspiring with a foreign country to interfere with our election. So to that extent, I think that if people are waiting for some bombshell that says there's collusion, or there's a hint of collusion on Trump's part, but that there's not enough evidence, I think they may be let down if they're waiting for that. However, if you're willing to sift through a lot of detail and you're willing to get to the bottom of some of the innuendo that's in the report, I think there's going to be some things that really are disturbing about the fact that a presidential campaign could be infiltrated to the extent that this one was. And, you know, that could be damning in the long run to Trump, not now. And I don't think there's going to be any significant fallout in the next 2 to 3 months as a result of this report. The Trump campaign folks, the Trump folks, they'll continue to spin this in the way that they've continued to spin it from day one, that there's nothing there. It's a big nothing burger. It has nothing to do with Trump himself. We told you from day one, then we told you when Barr's summary came out. And, you know, they've had the advantage of time. They've had the advantage of throwing the first punch, so to speak, you know, and saying that all this has been fabricated as to Trump himself. The problem is that there's no fabrication as to the indictments and convictions. Those things are real. And those things happened as a result of folks that are in the Trump campaign that were associated with the Trump White House. So the damaging thing here is that in the long run, a very wise candidate, a very politically astute party and party leaders can look at this and say, wait a minute. Okay, maybe we can't prove that you knowingly did anything, but isn't it just as bad that you unwittingly allowed these people to be involved in your campaign, to be that close to the White House, to be that close to our secrets, to be that close to the power center of our country, that you were so lackadaisical and uninformed that you allowed this to happen? So I think that once that narrative is allowed to take hold, and that's going to take some time, Master Patsy. It's going to take some time. It's going to take a political message and crafting to do. It's going to damage Trump, but it's not going to happen right away. And that's my big takeaway.
Yeah, you know what? I think you're right. I think that if you're on the Trump side, okay, and I'm being really simplistic about this, and I'm really making it a we versus them type thing, right? And I don't mean to, but it's the best way to explain this, I think. If you're a MAGA, then I think what you're going to get tomorrow is going to make you feel pretty good tomorrow. And I think right. If you are an anti-Trumper or a Democrat or a liberal or, you know, basically anybody who's not wearing a MAGA hat, then I think tomorrow is going to upset you. It's going to bother you. But one thing I've noticed about Donald Trump and his campaign and everything that has surrounded him since he got into political life, everything that seems to be a positive with him, even whenever it came to the tax cuts, whenever it comes to, just about anything, it always seems like there's a real bright, shiny, positive light that hits him for about an hour. Good. The tax cut was never happened to you right up until it did. And then anybody, you know, since the who pay their taxes knows that really didn't work, did it? Everything he does that seems to benefit him only benefits him in a very short term. It's a really, really hot fire that dies out really quick. If yep. you're looking at this long term, and that's where I thought your point was dead on, the best he could do long term is say that we're incompetent, right? That's the best thing he could, his party or his campaign, his people, him himself can say. Of course, you know, I mean, he'll pass it on to somebody else. He'll never shoulder any blame, but he'll say, you know, it wasn't me, it wasn't us, it was this guy. I barely knew him. I barely did this, you know, just like he did with everybody who's been indicted so far, everybody who's pled a deal so far. I was going to say Stephanopoulos. Papadopoulos was, what was he? He was an errand boy, right? Or wasn't that what it is?
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Right.
So there's always, he's always tries to separate, you know, he never even heard of WikiLeaks up until, you know, a week ago or whatever. Right. And never, that just, it's not even my deal. I don't know what these guys are, but he said it every day for a month while he was on tour. In the long term, it definitely benefits everybody who's running against them, simply because his high watermark in his argument, whatever that argument is, the best he can do is say that he or people he hired, his staff, which is people he hired, were incompetent. That's the best he can do, right? And you're right. Anybody with a half a brain running against them, which is, let's be honest, everybody, all, you know, 20, whatever, on the Democratic side, they're all smart. I don't know what good campaigns they have. I mean, you could be really smart and not have a great campaign. Look at Hillary Clinton, right? But
right,
the fact that this is going to be an easy win, I don't want to say win like an electoral win, but just as a battle, like as an argumentative win, for anybody who's challenging him, because the best he can do is say he's incompetent. And these guys will
Right.
run all over that. You know, I mean, hell, I have no political experience at all, and I'd run all over that. You know? So
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think you were dead spot on in your assessment and what's going on. The only thing that gives me pause is that I don't care what news outlet you're watching or listening to or reading. All of them have said that Trump's people are already preparing a rebuttal. And I don't understand how you can prepare a rebuttal for something you haven't seen yet, other than,
Right.
are you going to believe me or your lying eyes? Right?
Right.
I don't understand how these people could be doing this. And so that's why I think maybe there's a little bit of something there. And I agree with you, it's not going to be a bombshell. It's not going to be, you know, no, he did it. Here's all the proof we have, and yada, 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 oh, so on down the line, regardless of what you think. And Barr's just covering it up because whatever happens tomorrow, whatever happens on Thursday, there's going to be a subpoena for Bob Mueller on Friday, right?
Right.
And maybe I'm making that a little simplistic, but the point is, it's going to be really, really quick. It's going to happen, you know, as far as in terms of the speed of our government in the blink of an eye.
Absolutely. And I do think there's going to be something there. I do think that, and I agree with you, and I don't mean to say, and I hope I alluded to that when I first opened my segment, that I think it'll be in there. There's going to be something in there when you parse through this. The problem is, it's going to be able to be painted by, and this is what you brought up very, very importantly, that there is going to be a rebuttal prepared, and they already are preparing it, the Trump team, legal
True.
team. It's not Trump because he's not patient enough to parse through 300 or 400
He don't think he's
pages
capable of it,
and
to be
figure out
honest.
what he needs to rebut to and how to articulate that in written form. I mean, the guy's very savvy. He's politically savvy. He lands on his feet. So I'm not saying he's dumb, but I'm saying he just doesn't have the patience or time to do that, what is required to set up that rebuttal. But as you said, Master Patsy, there's going to be a rebuttal. And it reminds me of the Shakespeare line, methinks thou doth protest too much. Because, if there's nothing wrong, then you don't need to be saying, well, gee, it wasn't me. I didn't do anything. I didn't sleep with that woman. Nobody accused you of sleeping with that woman. Why are you saying you're sleeping with that woman? I think you're protesting too much. But the point is, they're doing that because they're to the trained eye, and to somebody who's going to take the time to look at this, there's going to be all kind of links to say that he obstructed justice, but that they couldn't really do anything about it at this point in time for a variety of reasons. And what I believe is the big rebuttal to this is going to be, they're gonna really point fingers at how the evidence was gathered. They're gonna point fingers at how the investigation started, and say that it was illegally started, and that none of these things that came out of this should even be considered, first of all. And that secondly, that since there's no crime, there's no cover up, and there can't be obstruction if there's no crime. And you really have poison fruit that you've gathered here because you started this whole investigation from an illegal standpoint. So I think that's where they're going to try to make their continuation of the arguments that they've made, the continuation of the narrative that they want to frame about this whole matter. And that's what I have no idea. I'm not a fly on the wall on their legal team, but I'm just suspecting that their rebuttal will be along those two very strong lines, maybe three. One, you've got an illegal investigation that really shouldn't have happened. It was on shaky ground to begin with. Two.
Oh, he seemed to have lost Frank. Getting back to his argument, though, you know, I completely agree. I think you're right. And I preface that by saying, well, they already they've been making those arguments for 2 years, right? They've been lying to everybody and saying it's been an illegal investigation for 2 years now, right?
Right.
So they already have that established. So they'll continue to run on that because they already have a foundation for that line of BS.
Exactly.
And you know they'll just go on and on and on and on and on. And I guess it's that old saying, right? If you say a lie long enough, people start to believe it.
That's their MO.
Yeah,
That's their that's one of
that's
their playbooks.
what they've been going on. And they've been holding on to that from the size of his inauguration, right? They have from that point on. They have been spouting lies and saying them over and over and over again. And whenever people get to the point where even their own people are calling them out on it, they just drop it and they go on to the next one. And that's really disturbing. But yeah, that's their MO. That's what we hired. That's who we hired. So that's what we have until we can fire them, I guess. But I think, you know, people are gonna dissect this report, this redacted report in a large number of ways. And I am somebody who by definition is very cynical.
You
And I really am. There was to be a redacted report. Why wouldn't you just let the person who created the report do the redaction? They're saying that they've had Mueller's blessing and the Mueller's people have been working with them. But I'll be honest, Frank, I don't know how much I actually believe that.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's something that's going to come out as well, you know, because that's something that would be a real dumb one to lie about. Not that they haven't lied about dumb things, but because, you know, as you said, it's going to be real soon that Mueller's going to be in front of Congress. And one of the questions that they absolutely can ask him is, once you turned in your report, to what extent did you work on any redactions? To what extent did you work on the summaries that we got to see, you know, anything like that. And that's perfectly in bounds for him to answer that question.
Yeah, there's no security issues there. Do you think, and if you we talked that we hit on this an episode or two ago, whenever we were talking about him going in front of Mueller going in front of Congress. And how he's probably going to be subpoenaed. It's sort of a friendly or soft subpoena or whatever you want to call it. Do you think that he's, let me start over. How much do you think he's going to be restricted to say whenever, you know, whenever he gives it, they give answers and they say like, well, you know what? I really can't talk about this, or, you know, for security reasons, I can't talk about that. How much of this process particularly, not as much as, I'm not talking about the process that generated his report. I'm talking about since he submitted his report. How much of that do you think he's going to have free rein to talk about?
Questions. You know, I could see, you know, some flub ups. And look, this is, I'm hard on people sometimes when they ask questions, because that's that lawyer in me that, you know, wants people to ask the perfect question. And I get real tight when somebody who's a non-lawyer like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez asks very specific questions that's leading to a conclusion that she's not, you know, using puffery, she's not, you know, being extra wordy, she's not trying to like look at me. She's just asking the questions that end up getting to a point. You box somebody in with these questions and you do it piece by piece by piece, block by block by block. And she did that really well. So somebody, you know, she has it inside of her. She's definitely got some skill, but she's also probably got some good team players that are with her helping her as well. I would imagine her staff may contain a lawyer or two, but she does a great job. So, you know, I get a little rough on some of the folks, you know, as I've done in the past with their questions. So I could see some flub ups where they may cross the line with a question or two, even about the post report work. may, you know, allow for some of that. Hey, I can't, you know, there's an objection on the other side to me answering that question, and I can't answer that question. But I would say that once they get the hang of what they're doing in there, once they start questioning them, there's probably a lot. I would have to say 90%+ of what's been done post report would be fair game.
Okay, you know, because I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, you know, there's not going to be a whole lot other than maybe the process that he took whenever he was creating the report that are going to be things he can't talk about, right? And let's be honest, anybody who makes an argument against that is just being ignorant. You need these guys to have the ability to do their jobs. And by giving them that out of saying I can't talk about this is allowing them to do their jobs, right? So you need that. There are things that we can't see, and there are things that we shouldn't see. Not because we can't handle it or anything like that, but because you have to protect the investigators. You have to protect the people who are doing
protect
their
the
jobs.
Informants, protect the people who are going to be witnesses in cases that are still yet to be tried. Absolutely.
Yeah. So anybody who thinks that we as the general public is going to see a full unredacted report, you're not really thinking correctly, because we're not going to. Maybe, you know, 20 or 30 years from now, we will, but not anytime soon. That being said, there's no reason that Congress can't see this report unredacted, right? A lot of these guys, you get the Adam Schiffs of the world, they see, you know, they see this stuff all the time. There's no reason for them not to see this report. There's no reason, you know, even and you know, his Republican counterparts to not see this report. There's literally no reason.
And there are a lot
that.
Of them
that
want to see the full report. And, you know, you asked me a question a couple podcasts ago, Master Patsy, that I think is very relevant right now that we're talking about this. Your question was, you know, what do I think about the way the strategy that the Dems are employing to push for the full report, and whether or not they should go to court, and whether or not they should be, you know, waiting to see what happens with Barr producing the report and negotiating around the redactions, et cetera, et cetera. And I think they've played it right. Now that we are here and we're not too far down the road. I mean, we're far enough that they've been able to set the tone and set the narrative and kind of have the benefit of some time passing. But in the big scheme of things, you know, how far out are we out from when they start running primaries for the 2020 election? Pretty far. And the way we started this segment about, you know, next 3 months aren't going to be huge bombshells hitting, you know, in my opinion, that could change, but I don't expect that to happen. But after that, once you start to really get into the nitty gritty of this thing, it could be a fodder for some good campaign work. And I think that the relevance of that question you asked a couple weeks ago is that, look, we're here now and we got the moment that we've been waiting for to see, you know, at least a redacted report. And I think the smart strategy here was that they've got to this point without litigation. Litigation could have delayed things even longer. Litigation could have had some uncertainty involved. Litigation could have set the parameters worse than what Barr may have been willing to give. You know, I don't believe that, but in my heart, but and in my mind tells me that Barr is probably going to overreach a little bit more than what a court would have allowed, but it's still uncertainty. And then you have this finality, you know, you have this finality that you now you're stuck with. So here we have something where Barr was willing to give X, but maybe now that we get X, now that Congress gets X and the public gets X, after they get X, there's nothing stopping them from then going to court and saying, okay, now we've seen X, we want the full report, and a court order is allowed. You can get a court order to remove these redactions if we show just cause or reason to have these redactions removed. And that goes to your point today too. There's no reason why Congress can't see these things. So they can make the argument in court and say, look, we're not the general public. We're the United States Congress. We know that we have to safeguard these things, but we also know that we have to safeguard the country. And there's things in this redacted area that deal with what we've seen. We've seen X. Now we need to see Y so that we can make the conclusion Z. because without Y added to X, we're never going to get to Z. We can't get to the end. So court, listen, we have to see this. It's in the national interest to see it. And we're not going to disclose it to anybody. We have parameters. We'll have safeguards put in place. They can make whatever argument they want. But see, the nice thing is now they've already got something in hand. And when they go to court, they're not going to get less than what they already got. They're probably going to get more.
Well, let me ask you this right then, because you're alluding to something I've been kind of that is eventually it seems like the Trump the AG, everybody involved seem to be just stretching this out as for as long as they can. That everybody that's been watching this for 20 seconds knows eventually, at least, let me put it this way, eventually people, certain people, probably more realistically, are going to see, they're going to get the truth. They're going to see the whole thing. And all they're doing is just delaying and delaying and delaying. They can't stop the inevitable. They can only delay it. And I that's question number one is do you think my argument is true? And my second question then is if you agree with me that literally all this is stalling, it's just delaying, because eventually, you know, there are certain members of Congress that are going to see the truth, they're going to know what's going on. And Adam Schiff keeps insinuating that he already knows a whole hell of a lot more than he does, than he's letting on. My second question then is, if you believe that they are just continuously putting this off and continuously delaying and delaying and delaying, why? What's the end game? They have to be delaying this for some reason. Is it just to wait it out? Is it just to, you know, so, you know, Trump gets his time in and he can collect a pension now? I mean, you know, what do you think their end game?
It's a process of beating down the consciousness of America. It's a process of beating down the will of people who are opposed to your ideology. You know, it goes back to, I think last week we really hammered on this whole game, the game plan of delay, deny, deny, delay. It's like an insurance tactic. You know, when you have an injured person, we deny that we have any liability. We deny that you have any injuries as a result. If we did anything wrong, then you don't even have any injuries. And if the injuries you have are anything at all, they're less than what you're claiming they are. So we're not going to pay you. You have to go to court to try to prove any of that stuff. And then it takes a long time to go to court, and they drag that out and they drag it out and drag it out. And by the time years go by before you get to the court case, people are beat down and they'll take less money than, you know, that they think their case is worth. A lot of times that's what happens. And that's a strategy. Sometimes they even play out that, hey, these people might just die before they even get to court. You know, so their claim just goes away or just essentially fizzles away. So, but in this setting, it's not an aggrieved, injured party in and of itself. There's an aggrieved nation. There's a half the nation that's aggrieved. And we've got a lot of people who have been very upset by the process that's taken place. But the longer time goes on, look, you've got your kids, you've got your parents, you've got your job, you've got whatever else that's going on that occupies your mind and your time. You got to put food on the table. You've got to clean the house. You got to take care of the yard. You know, winter changed to spring. We got to do some things now. So people, and here we go back to some of the media that's playing the orchestra for Trump, playing his set of sheet music, USA Today's of the world, et cetera. They run headlines and run stories that say things like, well, Americans now have turned their attention to the table talk values. They don't care so much about the Mueller report anymore. They want to know about, you know, what's going to bring food to their table, and what are the staple issues that every American's dealing with. How are we going to deal with those issues? You know, security, country security, economy, you know, childcare, healthcare, those kind of things, which isn't necessarily a bad thing for the Democrats, but it works to the advantage of Trump's team in that people, because there's such a delay, lose interest. And because they set the narrative around what the expectation around this Mueller report is, people start to say, well, you know, why do I need to see it? I mean, we've already heard that there's really not much there. There's been these indictments, that part of it's done with. There's cases going forward. As to Trump, really there's nothing there. So they don't care anymore. And that delay served a greater purpose for Trump's team.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I think I would like to believe that, and I think that I do think that Master Patsy, what you're saying is going to definitely have some. There will be a carryover of the blue wave, and this will fuel a lot of folks who had that emotion or had that fired up attitude about getting involved in politics. I think it's going to continue to spur that on in the next election cycle. I think the Mitch McConnells of the world either think that one, they're so embedded in their state politics and that they have such an advantage because they're an incumbent senator, that it's going to be real hard to beat them in the states that they live in. And secondly, even if they are beat, take a look at Mitch McConnell's, you know, bottom line. Take a look at what he's been able to accomplish for him and his family financially since he's been in the Senate. Do I think he wants to lose power over all this? No, I think he loves power. I think he loves the game, and I think he would hate to lose because of this. But at the end of the day, he probably also sees this as, look, if I happen to somehow, on a very, very off chance, very, very slim chance, lose my election, then I'm still set. I'm set in the sun. There's nothing that's going to bother me. And on the other hand, if I keep this ship together, which is the sinking Republican Party, but as long as we kind of huddle together in the lifeboat, then we can still kind of, you know, row ourselves to shore, because there's that base, you know, there's that base that just believes anything that we tell them, anything we feed them, even when we tell them, you know what, we're going to give the rich people tax breaks because it's going to eventually help them, you know. So.
Butchered Sports.
raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Well, folks, if you're not following Butchered Sports, you really should be. So thank you for their sponsor, and thank you for their owner and creator, Frank Nattel, who just happens to be your co-host today. Frank, I know we ran the commercial, but I also wanted to give it a plug. Your channel is absolutely fantastic. And well, I want everybody to know that.
I really appreciate that. And, you know, I love creating content for that, and only really second to sitting down and talking with you every week. Really, it's one of my loves, and so I'm just blessed to be able to do both these things. So thanks for talking about it.
Oh, anytime, Frank. Anytime. A couple days ago, Bernie Sanders, who I must be upfront and saying I'm not a big fan of. I'm really not. He did something that, in a lot of ways, was kind of unprecedented. A couple of months back, the chairman of the DNC decided to let everybody know that whenever the debate schedule came out, the DNC debate schedule came out, that Fox News would not be part of the debates. And he made that statement, and it was kind of a lot of hype over nothing, because I don't remember Fox News ever hosting Democratic debates anyhow. But he made a special point of letting everybody know that Fox News will not participate in the debates. As far as I know, and I might be wrong, and if I do, I apologize. Or if I am wrong, I apologize. I do not think that the debates will even be aired on Fox News. Now, I might be wrong about that. They might be, you know, carrying it and, you know, and hosting, you know, have a studio host afterwards, and probably, knowing Fox, probably come up with some sort of rebuttal afterwards, because they're just freaking goofy. But then a few days ago, they aired a town hall meeting, or a town hall setting. I don't even know what you want to call it. You know, a town hall thing. CNN's been doing them every week with every Democrat that's running. But they... Fox did one with Bernie Sanders. And there's been a lot of pushback and a lot of drama around this, not because of what he said. We'll get to that in a second. There's some drama about that. But just the fact that he went on Fox News's air. And Frank, just give me a second to get on a soapbox here for a second. There's a couple of martial arts organizations that I belong to. And as a representative of that organization, expects me to, I don't want to say act a certain way, because it's a kind of universal thing for us. You know, just like, you know, attorneys, you know, you all have bars and you have to, you know, you have to conduct yourself in a certain way or face consequences. But there are certain things that they expect us to do, certain things that they expect us to patronize, and certain things that they expect us to avoid. And I look at the DNC in that same manner. You know, they are supporting Bernie financially, with bodies, just to, you know, start getting his campaign going, just like they're doing with all the other every candidate, not just Bernie in particular, but anybody who's representing the Democratic Party. And there's a part of me who looks at what he did as a martial artist, as a quote unquote traditional martial artist, where he never should have gone against kind of the foundation that the DNC set whenever they decided they weren't going to include Fox News and anything they do. But there's another part of me who says, if you do not engage the Fox News audience, then the only people that they're going to hear, or that they're going to tell them what you had to say or what your platform is, the only way you are going to be defined is by how Fox News defines you. And in a lot of ways, Bernie made it very difficult for Fox News to paint him in a light that they wanted to paint him in because he was able to talk directly to their audience. So I'm curious to as to what you think. Do you think that do you think Bernie acted appropriately, number one, and number two, do you think that he acted that even though it was or was not appropriate, do you think it definitely had positive results?
Yeah, first of all, great analysis that you put together there. And I enjoyed hearing you on your soapbox about this. To answer your questions, I think it's entirely appropriate. I'm not commenting on my like or dislike for Bernie Sanders, the candidate or the politician. I think that it's entirely appropriate. And the reason I say that is this. In this, we'll call it game, the political game that everybody's playing that's involved in running for 2020 election, any kind of publicity is good publicity. Any airtime on television is good airtime. He's getting it essentially free. So he's basically playing the Trump playbook by getting free time with the Trump base. As you said, you know, he's gonna get a chance to speak right to the Trump base. And he's one of the folks that has not shied away from doing that. He likes to go into Trump country, so to speak, and speak to them and ask them pointed questions, you know, kind of bringing to their attention, look, what is your interest? What is your exact interest in what you're voting for? What do you want to see happen? So I think it's appropriate to have taken advantage of the opportunity to go on Fox News when he's kind of like under the umbrella of the Democratic Party, who has, you know, said, we're not going to let Fox News host any debates. Yes, I think it was appropriate. Number one, for what reasons I just said, and number two, because this wasn't a debate. The spirit of what the Democratic chairman Tom Perez said was, we're not gonna go and let them host any debates. does that extend to you not having any appearances on Fox News as a Democratic candidate? Maybe in spirit, but I didn't see that bright line. I don't see that as a bright line. No, you don't do this. So I think it was appropriate for those reasons. And then your second question, Master Patsy, do you want me to jump into that, whether it was effective or not? Or do you want to talk a little bit about my response to the first question first?
Well, let's talk about your response to the first question. I tend to agree with you. And the reason that I tend to agree with you is when it comes to, again, you know, I look at it from an arts point of view. Yeah, I do have a loyalty to these organizations that I am associated with because they have been there for me and they have helped me out a great deal. And anybody who thinks that they can achieve the rank that I've achieved or done the things that I've done without the support of organizations are fooling themselves. You simply can't do it. It's not possible. It's just too overwhelming. However, this is still my school. These are still my students. And until these organizations want to come in and start cutting me checks and start putting the lights on for me and start getting me students every month, I got to do what's in the best interest of my school and my students. Bernie Sanders still has to do what's in the best interest of his campaign. And if that means he's going to go on to a set that's hosted by Fox News and have this town meeting, and he feels that that is in his best interest for his campaign, well, at the end of the day, it's still his campaign. So he better do what's in the best interest of his campaign, or he shouldn't be campaigning. That's my opinion. So yes, now go. Please finish your thought on my second question. Do you think it was effective?
Yeah, let me get into that in a second. I just want to just agree with you, and I like your point, and it makes me think about the AOCs of the world. The AOCs of the world went right against a lot of the Democratic platform. At least mm-hmm. who was in her district that was a longtime Democrat and ran on whatever he believed the Democratic principles were. So sometimes rule breakers you know, are good for constituents. It's good for a party to have a little shakeup. So anyway, on to the next thing.
Right. So the thing of it is, she's going to do what's in her is in her district's best interest, regardless of what her party thinks she should do.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So right, effectiveness. Do I think it was effective? I absolutely think it was effective. And I think that the more, you know, the more Bernie Sanders does things like this, the more he reminds people that, you know, he was the voice of the people, so to speak. Now, I'm not commenting on whether I like the person individually. I'm just talking about from a political standpoint, right, effectiveness, you know. And I told you this story about how I went into Baltimore that one day after the campaign, after Super Tuesday, and he was out of the running, essentially. And there were throngs, thousands and thousands of people on a cold, wet day going to see him. But reminding folks on both sides of the aisle that, you know, he's not that typical party politician. So is it effective? Absolutely. I mean, I think it resonates with independent voters of some sort. It resonates with Republicans of some sort that he's willing to go on Fox News. I think it resonates with the people who want to talk about the table talk issues, right? Because he's all about that. He's going to have his detractors. There's a lot of people who feel that he is so just about himself and, you know, his tax return issue, the fact that he held that back and now that it's come out and it shows that he's, you know, a multimillionaire, is going to fuel that argument even more so that people that can, you know, are going to say, well, he talks the talk, but, you know, who is he about? You know, you see who he's about. So they can make that argument. But in the moment that we're in right now, for him to do what he did, it's very effective.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll be honest with you, Frank. If anybody thought that after all this time, that Bernie Sanders is not a millionaire, where has your head been?
Right, right.
You know, sure he is. But you know what? That doesn't mean, look, the Kennedys were was you know, one of the richest families our country's ever seen. That doesn't mean that they weren't looking out for the common man, quote unquote, common man's best interest. You know, I mean, the old man was a bootlegger, right?
Right.
So just because they have money, I promise you, Bernie Sanders did not come from money. He earned his money, and God bless him. He deserves it. If he earned it, God bless him. And that doesn't disqualify him from being somebody who can represent the quote democratic ideals, right? That doesn't disqualify him. The Clintons are not poor,
right?
Right. So this idea that he's a millionaire and for some reason, you know, he doesn't pass the purity test, to me, it doesn't ring true. That's not right. I have reasons for not liking Bernie Sanders that go beyond that has nothing to do with his money. If this guy's a millionaire or a multimillionaire or even a billionaire, God bless him. He worked his ass off for God knows how long. He deserves it, right? And I did like his comment about, you know, his book or whatever it is. It was like, yeah, so kill me for being a millionaire or something like that. You know, it was like, because he earned it. He really did. And I don't have a problem with that. My problem with Bernie is the way he never bowed out of the election, you know, the primary, the Democratic primary, whenever it was him and Hillary, when it was obvious he couldn't get enough votes. And he still stayed in it. And that just made me feel like there's ulterior motives there.
And it fractured.
Yeah, it did. I mean, that being said, she still got more votes than anybody in the history of our planet. And she still should have won. It was her, at the end of the day, it was a bad campaign. She should have gone to Michigan. She should have gone to PA. She should have done things that she didn't do. So I'm not blaming Bernie for her failure. What I am saying is he didn't help.
Right.
Right. You know, even whenever it was obvious that there is no way on God's earth he could. He didn't help.
Right.
Later, he was.
Right.
I feel like it. But again, like I said, that's for another story. funny how, you know, now you have Mayor Pete's, the Buttigieg, and a couple others. And I don't know if Kamala Harris is one of those people. I do believe Cory Booker is. And there's one or two others who are willing to go on Fox News and be in the same setting and do this whole thing all over again. You know, they want to have this town hall thing. I think that they saw the bump and the boost and the positive light that was able to shine on Bernie after this whole thing from people that they didn't expect. They thought he was going to get backlash and even you know, a lot of negative press from the left. And I promise you, he kind of figured that was going to happen too, because I've never said it, that Bernie wasn't smart. In fact, earlier in this same pod, I've said, you know, everybody on the Democratic side that's running are smart, every one of them. Some are smarter than others, but Bernie's smart, and Bernie knows how to play politics, and he's played the game for a long time. You know, him and Joe Biden are the you know, they've been in this game longer than a lot of these people that are going to share a stage with have been alive. So, you know, they understand how the game was played. He took a calculated gamble. He kind of knew what was going to happen, and it worked out for him. And there you go. So he's getting a lot of positive feedback, I think, from unexpected sources. So others want to jump on this now. And I don't think it's a bad thing. Let the enemy, the quote unquote, the enemy, see you for what you are and see what you have to offer. And if you're looking at a base of less than 40% that Trump has, I mean, at its best, it's at 40%. Yeah, amongst Republicans, it's sky high, but the Republican Party's garbage. But if you look at nationwide, he's barely pulling 4 out of 10. That's not good, right? That's really bad. If we can start cutting those numbers down a little bit, if you can start putting a wedge into those numbers, that only helps the Democratic side. I don't care if it's Bernie. I don't care if it's Buttigieg. I don't care if it's Cory Booker. I don't care if it's Kamala Harris. I don't care shit who it is. If you can get some people from the other side, again, I'm being very black and white about us and them. If you can get people from the other side to come to your side and say, you know what, I kind of like what he has to say.
Well,
and you're doing this now, right? In 2019. That's April of 2019. It's not even the end of the year. That's pretty good.
To that end, Master Patsy, to that point, and this is really martial arts stuff, and it's, you know, it reminds me of Sun Tzu, which is, you know, isn't necessarily martial arts, but the art of war. You know, I think you asked me whether what Sanders did was effective. I think it's tremendously effective in that regard. And I think that if you look at his ultimate enemy, his ultimate end is he wants to win the Democratic primary, but he wants to win the presidency over Donald Trump. And who was the most upset, the most visibly upset about Bernie Sanders? Donald, exactly. Bernie Sanders going on.
Donald Trump was.
Absolutely.
Yep, he was. He was pissed. And he turned on Fox News.
He did. He absolutely did.
Right? What's that tell you?
That's classic.
Right? I mean, that tells you something. Yeah. Yeah. And it might not mean much now. Okay? And in the overall scheme of things. But again, this goes back to what we talked about in the first segment. Are you playing the short game with a, you know, bright, shining light that, you know, in a real short amount of time dies out? Or are you playing the long game? Right, because I promise you, he now has a few people who watch nothing but Fox News starting to pay attention to what he's saying. And they probably wouldn't have if he didn't go on and do that town hall thing. They probably would just allow Fox News to dictate his message and his personality and his platform. And that was the end of it. He would have taken their word for it. Now they're seeing what he's about, and they're going to start following, and they're going to start listening to what he's saying, not what they're being told he's saying. And I think he, you know, is it a game changer? No. But again, It's April of 2019. He's starting to set a foundation. He's starting to chip away a little bit, and he's playing that long game. And I think the other Democrats are starting to catch on, and they want to jump on this too.
No doubt, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I honestly believe that. And just to get totally off topic, but apparently Tottenham advanced over Manchester City in Champions League.
Holy cow.
Holy cow, they did
And what's crazy about, I mean, that's crazy in and of itself, but Tottenham and Manchester City also play this weekend in the Premier League. So
Yeah.
that'll be three games in out of the four games that each of them play, which is wild. And it adds to the drama because
And
Manchester
Tottenham
City has to.
can play this game.
Harry Kane didn't play, who's the main striker for Tottenham. For folks that are listening that don't know, he's their main striker.
Now, I think that these chances of winning the Premier League have greatly improved because they don't have to worry about Champions League now, and Liverpool still has to play Barcelona. So, you know.
Did Liverpool, did they beat Porto today?
I didn't see the final yet, but they were up going into the match, and I know they scored at least one away goal.
Okay.
So, yeah, I really like their chances of advancing. I haven't seen a score yet, but there's I can't believe that Porto is going to put on a clinic where they're scoring four or five unanswered goals and getting over Liverpool. I just can't see that happening. They're not
Yeah,
Ajax.
I don't think so either. I mean, Ajax has a real special team that beat Juventus yesterday, but yeah, and they got those young players, you know, Matthias De Ligt and Frankie de Jong. They're a nice squad. But yeah,
That's a great
as
squad.
far as the Premier League title, I agree with you that there's an advantage for Manchester City going. First of all, they have a game in hand. They have five games left, whereas Liverpool only have four. Now they are less concerned about. They don't have. They can't be concerned about this anymore because they're out of it. They're out of UEFA. But they do play Tottenham again this Saturday. There's a measure of revenge. They'll be involved in that. They'll say, "Hey, you just knocked us out, so now it's time for us to get retribution immediately against you." They do, unfortunately for them, if people are rooting for Man City, they play Tottenham, who's the third best team in the Premier League on Saturday. They play Man United, who's their crosstown rival, in their
It's a
derby,
derby.
and that's the fifth rated team in the Premier League. They play, I think, Brighton and Hove, which is a lower rated team, probably in the teens or the low, you know, 12, 13, 14 range. They're not really that good. So that's kind of a breather for them. But they play the seventh place team. I can't remember who it is right at the moment because that moves around quite a bit. But they have the seventh place team on their schedule. They did just beat Chelsea, which was a tough. No, that was Liverpool that just
I
beat
was
Chelsea. They just beat Crystal Palace, but Liverpool, on the other hand, plays the they play Huddersfield Town, who's already been relegated. They play Newcastle United is probably one of their toughest.
Yeah, Newcastle can beat anybody on any given day. They're kind of like Wolverton.
Lower table team as well. So they have, by rankings, they have the easier road. So
But it's only 2 points. City has the game in hand, and Liverpool's going to end up chasing a ball around a pitch for at least 180 minutes that City's not going to, because if you think you're going to go head to head with Barca and you're not going to chase that ball around, you've never heard of Johan Cruyff, right?
Tiki-taka. They're going to play that tiki-taka. They're going to move that ball all over the place.
They're going to
Pass,
move,
pass,
and
pass.
you're going to chase that ball for 90 for well 180 minutes
Yep.
plus stoppage time.
Yep.
So I think City now has the inside track to the EPL Championship. It's a shame they're not gonna compete in Champions League anymore. But you know what? Even Alex Ferguson will tell you the one thing you want to do is win your league. So I really think if I mean, I'm looking at it from a Manchester United point of view, because even though Barca is my favorite side, like in the history of sports, well, it's like 1 and 1A with them and the New York Yankees. If I'm looking at this from a neutral point of view, I'd much rather be in City shoes than in Liverpool shoes, even though I'm down 2 points. I really would.
I think you're right. I did a little piece on Butchered about that. I put it up on Twitter, and I think that they have the advantage. I just I don't think that the I think today what happened is that blessing in disguise. You're absolutely.
Yeah, I really do.
They have a little bit of fuel for the fire on Saturday. They've now lost two in a row to Tottenham, and I don't see them losing three in a row to Tottenham. So that's the big hurdle. And Manchester United has reverted to playing a little bit kind of back to their form before Gunner took over. They're still a better team than before Gunner took over, but they're not quite as – they don't have that same spark for the that they had for the first 10 games that he managed them. So,
well, no. But don't forget, on the other hand, Frank, the only English side that's ever gone to the new to Camp Nou and won a game was Liverpool, and they only did it once.
Yeah.
That's it. No one else has ever been able to go to Camp Nou and win a match. It's not Liverpool did it one time, and you know these clubs are hundreds of years old.
Yeah,
and it's only happened once. So you know don't be too quick to count out you know or discount the United performance yesterday. Yeah, it was bad, but you know the best player in the history of the planet. Who got beat up whenever he was at Old Trafford, physically beat up. Did you not think you were going to go to his home and he was just not, he's just going to sit there and say, okay, you guys can score. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to happen. He put two in the net, one that was a really good goal, one that was garbage, and Coutinho finished it off. And it's like, it's Barca at Camp Nou. It's a fortress. It's what Old Trafford used to be.
And that was in the first half that he put those two in when it was really, yeah. You know, You're saying like we're taking this by the scruff of the neck right now. You're not going to get into this game. You
yeah,
know, you put them
and
away.
That's it. And United had their chances. The first 10 minutes, United dominated that game. They could have put you know two in the back of the net, and all of a sudden we're talking about a totally different game.
Yep, clutch scoring is important. Putting you know people can say, well, you know, you can set somebody up. Anybody can put a ball in the net if they're set up. That's not true.
Don't let Messi breathe.
That's not true. You have to have that clutch. You have to have that clutch gene to score a goal, especially when you're playing against tough competition. Especially when you're playing on the road. So you know, I even say
you got four or five sides that are the best sides on the planet, right?
Yep.
You got Barcelona, Real Madrid, City probably was up there. They were knocking on the door, but you had PSG, you had Juventus, you had Bayern Munich, you know, in Germany. These clubs are going to be fighting for a Champions League finals every year. Every year, they're going to be. They're at that level. To get somebody a side like Manchester United, who have no fullbacks to talk about, have one good center back. Or I'm sorry, one good midfielder. Okay, maybe two. Well, one and a half. You're not going to go. I mean, what they did against PSG was an act of God. You're not going to get that twice, right? You're not. The side's just not that good. It just isn't. The players just aren't that good, and they don't perform like an Ajax, right? Who don't have great players, but they play good as a unit. You don't have that, and you don't have that very much at the top tier of European soccer, right? You know, you talk about the top teams in the top five leagues. That chemistry that you see with Ajax, you're not going to get because these guys are all mercenaries, right? They're all hired to come in and score goals and do their thing. They didn't come up through the ranks. They didn't they're not, you know what I mean? They're
yeah.
they're not the Phil Borks of the world, if you remember the old Pittsburgh Penguins, right? They're not. They're just Ajax is a real special side right now, and it's scaring me that the Barca has to play them, but yeah, we'll see what happens. We have to play Liverpool. Tottenham has to play Ajax. Oh, good luck.
I know, right?
Yeah, good luck. Yeah. All right. That's not the side you want to play right now. You better off playing Barca.
Yeah.
Because that's the side that knocked out Real Madrid and Juventus back-to-back.
You got it. They believe in themselves right now, and they have good reason, yeah.
That's a hell of a
well,
side.
Tomorrow's
to
my big day. Tomorrow I want to see Napoli return the favor on Arsenal and put up three goals and shut them out and move on. We'll see if they can do that, though.
Yeah, anytime Arsenal loses is a good day. okay, Frank, I think we better wrap this up. We're a little over time. Great conversation today. Thank you so much. It was a great conversation today. And to everybody who's been listening, like, you know, Master Grant and I say on Sundays and how Frank and I say every Wednesday, your time is very valuable. And the fact that you're willing to share some of that time with us, believe me when I tell you, I'm being as sincere as I can possibly be. It means a great deal to us. It truly does. So, Frank, and until we talk again, it's been awesome. Thank you so very much for your time. I'm so glad you're a part of this. And I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Right, thanks, everybody. Goodbye. God bless. Bye-bye. Well, that was weird. I don't know what happened there. But again, my question is, what, number one, why the delay? Or do you think it's delays? It's just delay after delay after delay. And if you agree with me that all they're doing is just delaying the inevitable, what do you think is their end game? Why at the end of the day are they continuing to delay things?
It's a process of beating down the consciousness of America. It's a process of beating down the will of people who are opposed to your ideology. You know, it goes back to, I think last week we really hammered on this whole game plan of delay, deny, deny, delay. It's like an insurance tactic. You know, when you have an injured person, we deny that we have any liability. We deny that you have any injuries as a result. If we did anything wrong, then you don't even have any injuries. And if the injuries you have are anything at all, they're less than what you're claiming they are. So we're not going to pay you. You have to go to court to try to prove any of that stuff. And then it takes a long time to go to court, and they drag that out and they drag it out and drag it out. And by the time years go by before you get to the court case, people are beat down and they'll take less money than, you know, that they think their case is worth. A lot of times that's what happens. And that's a strategy. Sometimes they even play and think that, hey, these people might just die before they even get to court. You know, so their claim goes away or just essentially fizzles away. So, but in this setting, it's not an aggrieved, injured party in itself. There's an aggrieved nation. There's half the nation that's aggrieved. And we've got a lot of people who have been very upset by the process that's taken place. But the longer time goes on, look, you've got your kids, you've got your parents, you've got your job, you've got whatever else that's going on that occupies your mind and your time. You got to put food on the table. You've got to clean the house. You got to take care of the yard. You know, winter changed to spring. We got to do some things now. So people, and here we go back to some of the media that's playing the orchestra for Trump, playing his set of sheet music, USA Today's of the world, et cetera. They run headlines and run stories that say things like, well, Americans now turn their attention to the table talk values. They don't care so much about the Mueller report anymore. They want to know about, you know, what's going to bring food to their table, and what are the staple issues that every American's dealing with. How are we going to deal with those issues? You know, security, country security, economy, you know, childcare, healthcare, those kind of things, which isn't necessarily a bad thing for the Democrats, but it works to the advantage of Trump's team in that people, because there's such a delay, lose interest. And because they set the narrative around what the expectation around this Mueller report is, people start to say, well, you know, why do I need to see it? I mean, we've already heard that there's really not much there. There's been these indictments. That part of it's done with. There's cases going forward. As to Trump, really, there's nothing there. So they don't care anymore. And that delay served a greater purpose for Trump's team.
Interesting. I think the one thing they're not counting on, though, is the dynamic and the wave and the emotion, for lack of a better term, because I really don't know the way to describe it, that gave us the AOCs of the world, right? They gave us this blue wave that happened, you know, this past November. Your argument makes sense, but I think where they're kind of tripping over their own feet is that only means that the behavior that created this blue wave in November is just going to continue to go on. So what you, what I, and I said, and you know, you and I have been on live on air, and I've said what happened in November should have been a shot across the bow to these people. And instead of learning from what happened here and trying to adjust so they're not taking another shot across the bow, and this time it's going to be a shot in the heart, they're just blowing it off like it didn't happen, and they're going to continue on their way. This is not good for people who in a certain branch of Congress have 6-year terms as opposed to a president who can only do 2 4-year terms. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So
the Mitch McConnells of the world are in trouble.
Well, you know, I think I would like to believe that, and I think that I do think, Master Patsy, what you're saying is going to definitely have some, there will be a carryover of the blue wave, and this will fuel a lot of folks who had that emotion or had that fired up attitude about getting involved in politics. I think it's going to continue to spur that on in the next election cycle. I think the Mitch McConnells of the world either think that, one, they're so embedded in their state politics and that they have such an advantage because they're an incumbent senator, then it's going to be real hard to beat them in the states that they live in. And secondly, even if they are beat, take a look at Mitch McConnell's, you know, bottom line. Take a look at what he's been able to accomplish for him and his family financially since he's been in the Senate. Do I think he wants to lose power over all this? No, I think he loves power. I think he loves the game. And I think he would hate to lose because of this. But at the end of the day, he probably also sees this as, look, if I happen to somehow on a very, very off chance, very, very slim chance, lose my election, then I'm still set. I'm set in the sun. There's nothing's going to bother me. And on the other hand, if I keep this ship together, which is the sinking Republican Party, but as long as we kind of huddle together in the lifeboat, then we can still kind of, you know, row ourselves to shore, because there's that base. You know, there's that base that just believes anything that we tell them, anything we feed them, even when we tell them, you know what, we're going to give the rich people tax breaks because it's going to eventually help, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Frank, that makes all the sense in the world. Come back from break. I want to talk a minute for maybe probably the remainder of our time about one Bernie Sanders and him and the Fox News town hall that he had the other night. So we'll talk about it on the other side. We'll talk to you, and we'll be back in 1 second, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Lessons from the Dojang with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show and want to know more, check out dojanglelessons.com and please leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Join us again next week when we discuss whatever the hell's been going on.